to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Dan Friedel tells us about the job struggles young people in India are facing. Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Recent studies say India is soon to be the most populous country in the world, with about 1.4 billion people. More than half of India's population is under the age of 30. That means India has hundreds of millions of working-age people. Financial experts note that the country's economy is growing quickly. However, many young Indians are missing out on the growth because they do not have jobs. Rafiq Nagar is an extremely poor area of Mumbai. About 800,000 people live there in poor conditions. Among them is 23-year-old Nizamuddin Abdul Rahim Khan. He struggles to find work. He spends his time playing cricket on the street. Khan said he earns about $122 each month by working as a laborer for home repairs or construction. Nasim Jafar Ali works for a nonprofit organization in Mumbai. He said Khan is not the only young person who wants to work but cannot find a job. During the first part of the COVID-19 pandemic, the unemployment rate in India's cities rose above 20%. While the rate has gone down recently, many full-time jobs have not returned. As a result, more people are doing casual work. That means they are not working full-time or every day. While India's economy is growing, experts say the country will not reach its potential if such large numbers of people struggle to get work. Radhika Kapoor studies unemployment for the Indian Council for Research on International Economic Relations. She said, "People who are officially unemployed are only the tip of the iceberg." She said a larger problem is underemployment and those who are unemployed but not correctly counted. She called it disguised unemployment. Khan said he helps his family with the money he makes, but he wants to be able to do more. He said, "If I get a permanent job, then there will be no problem." Jayati Ghosh is an economist who is concerned about young people missing out on the country's growth. She said, "There are a lot of young people whose families spent money on their education, but those people still cannot find work. That's horrifying," she said. "It's not just the question of potential loss to the economy. It is a lost generation." Ghosh said the fall of small businesses has been the biggest problem in India. She called it a collapse. Ghosh said recent government policies hurt small businesses, and so did the pandemic. The government said over 10,000 small businesses closed between April 2022 and March 2023. A year earlier, 6,000 such businesses closed. As a result, many people who would have worked for these small businesses in past years are now on their own. but self-employed people only earn about $178 per month. People working for businesses make about $212 per month. The problem is more severe in India's major cities. There are 150 million working-age people in cities, but less than half have jobs. In recent years, many young people have come to cities from rural areas in search of work. Even people who have an education and job experience cannot find work. Arshad Ali Ansari is a 22-year-old student. He lives in the same neighborhood as Khan, the young man who passes time playing cricket. Ansari talked about his brother, who lost his job at a bank during the pandemic. Now he helps his father paint houses. The family of eight lives in a small room. They live on about $240 per month. "My brother had an education. He had experience," Ansari said. "His sister lost her job too. She was a social worker. She does not think she will find another job." Pranjul Bhandari is an economist for the banking company HSBC. He recently wrote a report about India's jobs problem. He said, "The nation will need to create 70 million new jobs over the next 10 years. However, the country is only set to create 24 million new jobs. That," he said, "means 46 million people will miss out on earnings." I'm Dan Friedel.
A new study suggests about one-third of planets orbiting our galaxy's most common stars may hold conditions to support life. The study was based on data collected by two telescopes. Researchers involved in the study centered their examinations on stars in our Milky Way galaxy known as red dwarfs. The American Space Agency, NASA, notes that red dwarfs are generally much smaller than our Sun. They are also the coolest stars and appear more orange than red. Red dwarfs are also known as M dwarfs. NASA estimates that they make up about 75% of all stars in the Milky Way. Experts believe billions of planets orbit red dwarf stars. The study found that a third of planets orbiting red dwarf stars could be in what scientists call the habitable zone. Being in a star's habitable zone means a planet has temperatures that could permit liquid water to exist on the surface. Since water is necessary for life as we know it, the presence of liquid means a planet could possibly support life. The planets examined in the study are called exoplanets. These are planets that orbit a star other than our Sun. Sarah Ballard, an astronomer at the University of Florida, carried out the research. Doctoral student Sheila Sager helped Ballard on the project. Their findings were recently published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Sager said in a statement that red dwarfs are excellent targets to look for small planets in an orbit where it's conceivable that water might be liquid and therefore the planet might be habitable. Sager added that the new findings will be really important for additional exoplanet research in the coming years. The researchers said that because dwarf stars are cooler, the exoplanets would have to be very near their star to be warm enough to keep liquid water. But the researchers also noted that being so close means the planets would also be affected by extreme tidal forces caused by the star's gravitational effect on the planets. The researchers said the remaining two-thirds of planets around red dwarf stars have likely been subjected to gravitational forces that cause the planets to heat up. This process is known as tidal heating. It can result in planets being sterilized with no chance for holding liquid water. Sager and Ballard said they measured the eccentricity of more than 150 exoplanets orbiting red dwarf stars. They described eccentricity as the shape of the planet's orbit around the star. The data came from NASA's Kepler telescope and the European Space Agency's Gaia telescope. Instruments helped the team collect data on how often the planets move in front of their stars. They also helped the team measure distances between red dwarfs. Sager said the distance measurements were a very important part of the research. Past studies had not included such measurements. The team noted that stars with several planets were most likely to have the kind of circular orbits that permit them to keep holding liquid water. On the other hand, stars with only one planet were most likely to see tidal extremes that could sterilize the surface. The researchers said their results mean that the Milky Way may have hundreds of millions of planets that could be studied for possible signs of life. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn is here now to talk more about this week's science report. Thanks for joining me today, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
The report talked about a new study estimating the number of exoplanets in our galaxy that may have the right conditions to support life. Let's take a closer look at some words we heard in the report that may be new to English learners.
Okay, that sounds good. I will start first with the adjective habitable. It is used in the story to describe a place that has conditions to support life. The word can also be used to describe a building, such as a home, that is in good enough condition to live in. A couple of synonyms for habitable would be livable or acceptable.
Another word from the report that might be new to our listeners is also an adjective, conceivable. What can you tell us about that word?
So this one means the ability for something to be imagined. The person using the word in the report is talking about the possibility of certain planets having liquid water. So in many cases, the word conceivable could be replaced with possible.
Okay. What is another word used and defined in the report?
How about the term sterilized? It was used to describe a process that damaged an area to the point where it was unable to support life. So any conditions that once existed to support life were destroyed, but a much more common usage describes an extremely deep cleaning process in which bacteria or other living organisms are removed from an area or a piece of equipment.
Well, thank you so much for those explanations, and thanks for joining me today, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of America's 37th president.
I, Richard Billhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear
that you will faithfully execute the office.
That I will faithfully execute the office
of President of the United States.
Of President of the United States.
Richard Nixon was sworn into office on January 20th, 1969. Nixon began his presidency at a difficult time. American forces, allied with the Army of South Vietnam, were continuing to fight against the communist forces of North Vietnam. Thousands of soldiers and civilians were dying. The Americans and South Vietnamese were making little progress, and there were anti-war demonstrations in the United States. There were also demonstrations against racial injustice. The issues that divided the nation also divided families and friends. At the same time, fighting the war meant there was less government money available to fight social problems. The last president, Lyndon Johnson, had proposed new legislation to help poor people and minorities. In some cases, Congress approved less money than he had requested. In other cases, lawmakers did not approve any money at all. The new president seemed well prepared to deal with the difficulties of being president. He was known for his ability to fight, to lose, and to keep trying. Richard Nixon was born in California. His family was poor. When he was about 10 years old, he harvested vegetables to help earn money for his family. He earned the money that he needed to go to college. Then he decided to study law. He was among the top students in his class. During World War II, Nixon served in the Navy in the Pacific. When he came home, he ran for a seat in Congress and won. As a member of the House of Representatives, Nixon became known for his part in the Alger Hiss case.
I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States.
Alger Hiss was a former official in the State Department. He had been accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusations. Nixon demanded a congressional investigation. Other members of the House thought the issue should be dropped, but Nixon succeeded and led the investigation. While never convicted of espionage, Hiss was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury that investigated the case. He was sentenced to prison. Some Americans disliked Richard Nixon for the way he treated people during the investigation. They felt that some of his attacks were unfair. At that time, fear of communism was very strong. Critics thought he was using the situation for his own gain to improve his political future. In 1950, Richard Nixon ran for the Senate. Nixon, a Republican, competed against Democrat Helen Gehagan Douglas, a former actress and three-time California congresswoman. During the often bitter campaign, he accused her of not recognizing the threat of communism in America. He also said that Douglas was pink right down to her underwear, a reference to her being sympathetic to communism. In response, Congresswoman Douglas gave Nixon a nickname he would never completely lose, Tricky Dick. Nixon won the election. Two years later, in 1952, the Republican Party chose him as its candidate for vice president. The candidate for president was Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower and Nixon easily defeated the Democratic Party candidates, Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson and Alabama Senator John Sparkman. They won again in 1956. During his 8 years as vice president, Nixon visited 60 countries. He faced violent protests during a visit to South America in 1958. The following year, he visited the Soviet Union. He and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev had what became known as the Kitchen Debate. It took place in Moscow as they visited a model of a kitchen that might be found in an American house.
Давайте так, телевидение, конечно, можно, но телевидение можно выступать, никого здесь нет, а потом это положите на склад.
The debate was about world peace. Nixon at one point told Khrushchev that he did not know everything, but there were light moments as well.
Не уступает.
Minus will tell. How minor can match American lawyer.
Адвокату.
No question about that.
Вы адвокат капитализма, я адвокат коммунизма. Вот давайте мы посоревнуемся.
All that I can say from the way you talk and the way you dominate the conversation, you would have made a good lawyer yourself.
In 1960, Nixon accepted the Republican nomination for president. He had many years of political experience and had gained recognition as vice president. Many people thought he would win the national election easily. But he lost to the young John Kennedy. After losing to Kennedy, Nixon moved back to California. Then, in 1962, he tried to defeat Governor Edmund Pat Brown, a Democrat, and lost. In conceding defeat, Nixon gave a final press conference in which he told reporters,
"For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore."
Nixon's political career seemed to be over. He moved to New York City and worked as a lawyer. But he made it clear that he was not ruling out a return to public life at some point in the future. Many Republicans began to see Richard Nixon as the statesman they wanted in the White House. By then, President Johnson had decided not to run for re-election in 1968. His Democratic Party was divided. The Republicans believed they had a good chance to win the election. Nixon campaigned hard against the Democratic candidate, Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was vice president under Johnson and had to defend the president's unpopular policies on the Vietnam War. Some Americans thought that the war should be expanded Many others demanded an immediate withdrawal. Both Humphrey and Nixon promised to work for peace in Vietnam. On Election Day, voters chose Nixon. He narrowly won the popular vote, but collected many more electoral votes than Humphrey. On the day after his victory, Richard Nixon spoke to a gathering of supporters. He told them that the great objective of his administration from the start would be to bring the American people together. Once in office, President Nixon proposed legislation to deal with problems at home. He called his proposals the New Federalism. One proposal was for revenue sharing. Under his plan, the federal government would share tax money with state and local governments. For 3 years, Congress objected. Then, in 1972, the revenue sharing plan was finally approved. Lawmakers also approved legislation for some of Nixon's other ideas. One changed the way American men were drafted into military service for the war. The new law said young men would now have their names chosen in a lottery system. Many people had criticized the earlier system, which they said chose too many poor people and racial minorities. These were the men who were fighting and dying in Vietnam. Congress also approved a change to the Constitution to decrease the voting age from 21 to 18. Supporters of the amendment said if people were old enough to fight and die in war, then they were old enough to vote. The amendment became law when three-fourths of the states approved it in 1971. On another issue, Nixon proposed to build a system to defend against missile attacks. He said it was needed to protect American missile bases. Congress approved the idea in 1969. Critics said it would only intensify the arms race with the Soviet Union. Nixon's first appointments to the nation's highest court also caused much debate. He named two conservative judges from the South, Clement Haynsworth and G. Harold Carswell. Lawmakers said Haynsworth had been unfair to blacks in his decisions and that Carswell was not prepared for the job. Congress rejected both nominations to the Supreme Court. President Nixon faced these disappointments and others, but he still had moments to celebrate during his first term. One came on July 20, 1969. On that day, he and millions of people around the world watched as two American astronauts became the first humans to land on the moon.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.